Warning, this podcast discusses addiction, mental health, and other sensitive topics. Please listen with care and take a break if needed. You are not alone, and support is available.
And hello, everybody, and welcome back to Malfunction Junction.
Thank you for joining us.
I'm Andrew.
I'm Jay.
How's everybody doing today? Jay, how are you doing today?
I feel like I say this every week so far, but it's been a fucking week, Doug. I'm getting tossed through the goddamn ringer here. But, you know, all things considered, I'm in a lucky position in life. Looking forward to some new change coming soon. Starting a new apartment. Getting the fuck out of the old one. A little bit of refreshing. So, all things considered, like I said, life is pretty good. Can't complain too much.
Well, just that's good.
Small stressors. What about yourself, brother?
Oh boy, and we'll get into it more in this episode, but I've been very stressed out lately. Extremely stressed, as some would say. There's been a lot going on in my school life, and thankfully everything's good in every other part of my life. Been pretty good otherwise, but that one school part of my life is driving me up a wall.
Understandably.
So that's what we have been, I have been dealing with the past week, is just school stuff that is, and it's not even homework. It would, and I'll get into it again, like I said,
three times now. Special circumstances,
it's special circumstances that have pissed me off, and that's unfortunate, but we'll get into it.
Mm-hmm.
This week's email question. I've been hearing more. I won't even get into it. I'll start out by saying this is a good question. I think we can get into this question. This question is on the topic of harm reduction, which they say, this is from Johnny in South Carolina.
Sweet.
I've been hearing more about harm reduction lately. Stuff like safe use kits, supervised consumption sites, and even people staying on Suboxone or methadone long-term. He doesn't get it. He says he comes from a long line, a background of where it was all or nothing. Either you're clean or you're not. But lately, I've been questioning that, is what he says. Especially after seeing friends who have died while trying to white-knuckle it. I'm sure we all know someone like that. Do you think harm reduction actually helps people, or is it just a way of enabling someone to stay stuck? I'm really trying to understand it better, and would love to hear your perspective, especially if either of you had to shift your thinking around it. So, Johnny here would like to know about our opinions on harm reduction.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go ahead and give you the floor on that one to begin.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
Obviously, there's quite a few little nuances and facets to the question here. What I'm going to start by saying is I think that one of the most important things when it comes to harm reduction is understanding that it should be a phase of your recovery process. Now, the important thing to remember is that phase is not the same for everyone. Like asking about the Suboxone or methadone long-term use. Obviously, I think most people who offer those services would suggest moving towards getting off of them as soon as possible and trying to reduce your use in any way you can. The truth is, though, not everybody just has a perfect, you know, linear journey. It's filled with ups and downs. And so for some people, staying in those phases longer is the only thing keeping them from falling back, especially depending on how you got into recovery. I think that's incredibly important. I'm dealing with that with some people in my life right now. I think that a lot of the getting clean came from externalization and the people around putting pressure on change. And so the thing keeping them from slipping back in wasn't this internally derived, I want to make a change in my life, I'm tired of this, da 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 da, as much as it was, I'm tired of hurting everyone else. And so it's really hard to convince those people.
Interrupt slightly real quick. I think that is a part of the recovery journey.
Mm-hmm.
That's a part of the recovery journey for sure. Because it's and wanting to change because you want to stop hurting everybody else is you know, it was at the very least, it was a part of mine.
Same for me.
It was, I wanted to stop. I was just causing a havoc in my life and my people and with the people around me, and I wanted that to stop. And I think then the real first step they say in Alcoholics Anonymous, they say, of course, is admitting to yourself that you have that problem.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it kind of preempts that, the acknowledge, the wanting to get help because you are causing havoc in your situation around you. I think that's like pre-first step stuff.
Yeah, and I think, too, it's one of the easiest ways to get yourself to finally start acknowledging. Like, it's the sign that a lot of times shows first, at least for me and a lot of people. We've talked about this, these kind of, like, narcissistic coping mechanisms that arise during use cycles. Mm-hmm. And so seeing it in the people around you usually happens before realizing it in yourself, because you're usually in this kind of denial phase. So I'm not knocking that. But I think that, like, depending on how many times you've relapsed and what phase you're in, it can just be something where you need an extended period of time of just staying in that, you know, coping mechanism, this harm reduction phase, just to make sure you don't slip back until you found a reason to do it for yourself. So to answer your exact question, do you think harm reduction actually helps people? Is just a way of enabling them? I don't think enabling is a fair word to use here. I think enabling is specifically a word we use, or at least should be, a word we use to describe times when our behavior is allowing somebody to worsen their lives or continue causing harm to themselves. This is not that. I largely believe that harm reduction's intention is to make a better change in somebody's life. Can it be abused? Can it be misused? Of course. But we can't control all those things. Especially from the outside and, you know, for the people around you and even just internally, you know, if the more you try and control something like that, the more it's going to feel like a burden to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just have to allow harm reduction to try and take its course, try and stick with the process. If you need to be there a little longer, it's okay. But enabling, like I said, it should be a word we use to describe behaviors that are intentionally or unintentionally allowing people to worsen their lives. And harm reduction is intentionally opposed to that. Andrew?
I would agree with just about everything you said.
Yeah.
I almost don't have anything to add. Just that it was... Harm reduction, like you said, I wanted to add on this, that it should not be a long-term solution.
Ideally, right.
Of course, you know, things are, you want just what works best for you. And
mm-hmm.
what works best for you is what might not be what works best for me. And what works best for, you know, each individual person might not be what works best for what their, you know, a sponsor or a parent or a friend or whatever thinks or worked for them or worked thinks will work for the kid or whoever's being the addict in question here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's important to recognize that we're all different here, and that harm reduction, you're not enabling anybody by, buying them something that is hurting them directly. Like the substance that is, like, if someone was like promoting my drinking, I would think of that as enabling,
right? Like, you know? Or the times when somebody's like, you know, dude, I just need one more hit, I need one more and then I swear I'm done, and you think that by doing so you're putting them towards recovery.
That's a great, yeah.
And rarely is that the case. So I would be careful with harm reduction. In that what you convince yourself is harm reduction may not always be the reality of it. I think we talked about it episode 1 or 2. This is something that's close to Andrew and I because we both hang out in the Kava and Kratom community.
Right.
A community that's pretty heavy with a lot of people that are ex-alcoholics, especially ex-opiates users. And the main point of that community is a harm reduction circle. It is to have something that allows you to have that feeling and the goods of it without a lot of the negatives. But that doesn't mean it exclusively comes without negatives. I mean, you know, there's the financial side and the time side, and not still dealing with like the internal things and underlying issues that have led you to those places. And so a lot of times I think the point of harm reduction, at least in my worldview for what it was with me, and this can change depending on the severity of your circumstance. For me, harm reduction was alleviating the pain enough to be able to deal with the issue so that I could find other things to do with my life that made life feel worth living. And like I said, I've kind of been dealing with something lately, but I had a conversation with a friend a few days ago. And one of the things I said to him was, I don't know what it is in this reality that you hate so much. I don't know why you can't stand it. I don't know if it's you. I don't know if it's the way people treat you. I don't know if it's things you grew up with and trauma you haven't dealt with and you don't even know anymore. But I know that you're a good dude and you can change this.
Tying into people
and having that, like, in my mind, the building a community and building a support group in those times of harm reduction, that it is meant for you to be able to build these safety nets of good people. Because we're social creatures. Having social safety nets are genuine safety nets. I don't know if you've seen like the videos of people who like skydive without a parachute and they jump into the net. You know what I'm talking about?
That's insane.
But it's like you go 30,000 feet. And I think a lot of times drug use is more like water, where it looks like something safe to jump into. It looks like something you can fall into. You get 100 feet up, you go try jumping into water, you're going to break your fucking spine. You know, it gets dangerous very quick. And so it has the allure of like, oh, I can just fall back into this. And it's never sustainable because the higher up you get and the more you're dealing with in life and the more dangerous substances you start working towards, inevitably that water's going to start turning into concrete as you jump higher and higher. And so you have to focus on building safety nets. If harm reduction is all you do with your life, I don't mean to be pessimistic. The odds of you not relapsing are very low.
Yeah, there has to be more to that.
Right.
It's more to your program of recovery, for lack of a better term, than just doing something that isn't going to harm you as bad as the substance that was harming you is.
Right. Are there things you would put forward as like ideal options or things that helped you with like creating positive change and like underlying change while in those times?
While in times of...
Like in these harm reduction times, do you think, do you spend time trying to focus on building relationships with other people or healing your underlying stuff? You know what I mean?
I spent a lot of times trying to repair the relationships that I damaged. Obviously, that was a big one. I had damaged a lot of relationships and I had felt the need to, found a couple of them to reach out and want to repair them.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I spent a lot of time trying to create new relationships as well.
Yeah.
That was a big one. And that's a big thing about the Kava community. That was really a big help. It wasn't even so much the substance switch that helped as much as the community based behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really nice, because I had never really had that growing up. I had always been a kid that was part of friends groups, but never part of one friend group, of multiple.
Same. I'm with you on that.
And so to have like a actual, you know, group of people that I could be around at any given time, that was really nice. And that helped me a big, because I, the way I've described this a bunch of times Kava bars being an extension of rehab.
Mm-hmm.
Because they are the same people that you'll meet in rehab.
Yeah.
It's the same people.
The big thing I was going to say, too, is the understanding. The thing I lacked in every other, like, social group, especially with alcoholism, because I had so many friend groups that all drank together.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found this community of people who were like, yeah, dude, it was fucking my life up, too. And then I'm like, yeah, dude, you know what I was doing to just, like, get a drink? And they're like, oh, brother, trust me, I get it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Like, I can tell my stories here, and people don't look at me like I'm an insane person.
Right.
And then talk about my struggles.
Because most people there have either been to rehab or know someone that's been to rehab and have been told what it's like. And in rehab, you should just share your stories.
Mm-hmm.
You're just what, and most people will tell you not to share war stories, which we are going to get into a little bit of war stories here later on in the episode, but just one from each of us, maybe. Well, maybe definitely from me, maybe from Jay if he comes in, if he feels inspired by mine.
Yeah, we'll see if the brain racks anything we're telling today.
But yeah, so yeah, it's all stories the whole time in rehab. And it's you know, and stories of other people, stories of addicts that recovered, stories of addicts that didn't recover, stories of all sorts of people, the individual people you meet in rehab, you hear, learn their stories. But, you know, that's the kava bars for you, is that you, it's a lot of people's stories and a lot of people, you learn a lot of individual people's stories through that place. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it is an extension of rehab.
Yeah, and I think one of the big things too, especially in the context of like harm reduction and building these social circles, is that in finding people like that, a lot of times you find other mechanisms to help work. As much as I support therapy, group therapy, you know, all the basics, sometimes it's really helpful to have people that are in your exact circumstance. They're like, you know, right. What I do to get around it? And they may have some really weird tic, you know, whatever right, yeah. It may be. I had a friend who used to, who told me very early on, he would just water down everything when he had a drink. So he'd put like a cap full of liquor in to like a glass of water so he could convince himself he was drinking. Again, this is a little dangerous. I'm not suggesting anyone do this. But at that time, because I never went full into rehab or anything of the sort, it was enough to do the same for me where I could convince myself yeah. I was drinking and essentially have almost no alcohol. Now, like I said, I don't suggest that to everybody because it means there's
alcohol. That doesn't work for everybody.
No, of course not. But it was one of those things that for me, I met someone who had been in my place and was like, look, this is what I did because I couldn't get myself to go to rehab either because I was scared of family finding out. And that's where I was. I was like, I don't want to talk to family about how much I'm drinking. And so he gave me this little tip. I started using that. It helped a noticeable bit. And, you know, I was eventually able to stop drinking. Can't say that fully ended my addiction cycles, but at that time it changed the thing that was the most harmful to my life.
Right, which, you know, that should be the goal, and that should be what the goal of harm reduction is to mm-hmm. change the things that are the most harmful in your life.
Right, and that's, I mean, if you go to anyone who spent extensive time in therapy, extensive and expensive.
For real, those are interchangeable terms there.
Right. If you've spent quite a while there, I think most therapists are pretty good at explaining, at least in my experience, that coping mechanisms are always traded off. That the entire nature of even most mental things, not even in the space of addiction, but that if you're dealing with things in an unhealthy way, that if you're super disassociative, that they're going, all right, well, instead of this, let's try maybe instead of every time this happens, you run away entirely. How about you deal with it a little bit and acknowledge it, and then you take a break from it, you know? And it's finding little ways to get your brain to start trading off the really bad habits for slightly more effective ones, and then taking those and slightly more effective ones. And that is the getting healthy part of it, whether it's mental health. If you're listening to this podcast, maybe not because you're an addiction, but because you have some serious mental health issues or you're incredibly depressed, whatever it is, a lot of times it's just making one step in the right direction. And that process takes a while, but that's why we say, like, you know, harm reduction is not something that you should try and have a timeline on, because making small steps in that direction is what matters most, right? Like, that you'll eventually move towards your destination.
Right, yeah. It's just, sometimes you gotta get off of zero.
Because the question being about, you know, I came from a background where it was all or nothing. I mean, that can be an incredibly dangerous thing in and of itself.
I agree. And he mentioned white knuckling it too. And I've been there. I've been in the white knuckle scenario where you're just like, I feel like I just need to fucking drink. And but then you I'm go not nuts. That's how my friend drink. Would eat, yeah. It's just like, you go nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's frustrating because you don't feel like anybody that's around you can understand that of like the harm reduction phase. And when you're in rehab, especially like 12 step types of rehabs are like, it is mostly all or nothing, white knuckle it out. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really dangerous. And it's no wonder that most rehabs have like very low success rates
mm-hmm.
because like they're asking something of people that's really only like 10% of the population is capable of. So it's no wonder that their success rate is really like 12%. I say that because their success rate, rehab success rate, is about like 12%. It might be lower than that, but it's not much. So I say 10% based off of like, that's just give or take number. But it's just like, it's I don't think that that's a normal thing to be able to do. I don't think normal people don't live their lives like that. Makes
not at all.
You know,
this is like a conversation you and I have had before too, right? About like this idea of being entirely sober,
right?
To like a degree of almost neurotic nature that like somebody
where it's its own addiction,
right? And like again, I've talked about how for me personally, weed was not good for my life. I did not enjoy it, but for somebody who did heroin, you know, weed can be a much better alternative.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where like, I think that this, that there are quite a bit of people with addiction, especially those who are very deep into it, where unless there's a full and clearly drawn set of boundaries around their life, they're going to struggle a lot. But like I said, I think for most people, going, all right, you're going to make some mistakes. That's all right. I mean, we talked about this last week with the, like the CHIP program. And that you spend 10 years, you know, working your ass off, and then you make, like, one little mistake, and then 10 years gone.
Yeah.
And it's like, at least for me, from where my mind works, that would be like a, fuck, I'm getting drunk then. You know what I mean? If I'm losing my chip, I'm losing my chip. You know what I mean? And I couldn't handle that properly. And so there's that nuance and balance. I think the word I'm looking for here is, like, flexibility within your recovery. Finding things that are just slightly better is incredibly important. The one thing I'll also say is somebody who's had to have the conversations with therapists about people who were in rehab, about people who are very close to me, is one of the things they repeated to me is that there are the early stages, you have to let them get into it. So like we talked about, I would be very careful about convincing yourself that something is harm reduction, especially super early on into somebody's recovery or rehab journey, that you're not trying to like alleviate their stress early on and be like, well, it's better than what he was doing before. Give that time, right? Let them get settled a little bit early on. Like, you know, when this person who was very close to me went in, they're like, if you keep trying to talk to them and keep listening to their stories, they're going to keep being able to manipulate their way back into using and going back to these negative behaviors, right? So they said, you know, take your space. You don't talk about that. If they bring that up and they start, you know, whether it's asking for money or saying, oh, I just need a little time to myself. Like, if you just let me be alone for a little while and help me out, give that space. Let them get into it, and then we can have those conversations later. But right now, they're still in that wanting to use mentality. And so I think you have to let people do it on their own for a little bit. So when it comes to the people around you, be very careful with pushing for harm reduction if they're starting that, you know, getting clean phase. Somebody who's deep into addiction, refuses to make any steps whatsoever, you can't get them to move forward. That's when I'd advocate, you know, maybe having a conversation with them, being like, dude, what can I do to help you start to get off this stuff? But, you know, people are adults, man. And, you know, going up to another grown adult who's got an addiction issue, like, you're not going to get them thrown in rehab overnight. So no, sometimes you have to have those conversations about, all right, well, what can we do instead? In,
unfortunately. Well, no. That's probably fortunate, but you can't check people in.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really all I got for that topic. But that's a heavy one, because it's tough, because people do die trying to white knuckle it, and it's, you know, it's
best. And a lot of people have also relapsed thinking they can toe the line. Yeah. You know, it's finding a balance.
Yeah. All right. All right, well, let's move on to the next segment here. We're going to go into our comedic segment here. We're going to go into clean, but still a mess. We're going to talk about my... Do you want to start on this one, or do you want me to start on this one?
I want to start by saying, look, I know we're only on episode 5, and we haven't built our viewers, but if, by chance, one of, you know, our few viewers does happen to work with a Mountain Dew representative, please let Kickstart sponsor us. They have no sponsored athletes. You guys are sponsoring nobody. You're in, like, the worst gas stations on the planet. just sponsor us. I'll talk so good about you. I love Kickstart. Coconut water, 10% juice. Please, give me a sponsorship. So that's where I want to start. moving on. Why don't you take it away? I think you got a pretty good story here, dog.
All right. So we're going to go in. It's labeled down here as teacher tussle. I didn't fight my teacher. I did not physically fight my teacher. But in my last 6 weeks of class, I did get into it with, like, pretty heatedly with my teacher.
It hasn't been a fight. It's been a war. That's what Andrew's trying to say.
It's been a war. And this particular teacher, it's been a war. We have had never a good relationship. And it's because we are exact opposites.
On site, baby.
And I'm not going to fight her. But she lives nearby here. It's funny enough. But, yeah, I just can't. I cannot stand her. I've never been able to stand her. And she finally yesterday, or 2 days ago, the other day, she called me out in class for, like, nothing. For something that five other people were doing in the class, which was I was doing her homework from her class. And she got all mad at me, called me out and said a bunch of stuff in class, and then, like, tried to talk to me outside of class, like, after we went to a break. Because when she said all that stuff, I just said, like, okay, whatever, Jesus Christ, I'm fucking, put it away. Mm-hmm. Laptop away, I put my notes away, and I just sat there, waited for a break.
Right, you were annoyed, but you didn't start shit.
And then she tries to talk to me outside of class, and I just politely said, I'm not talking to you. I don't want to talk to you. And she, like, kept on going, and I don't have to talk to you. And so she just kept going and was telling me stuff. You're always doing stuff like this. You're always disrupting my class. You are always disrespectful. And it's just like, yo, I don't have to respect you. I didn't tell her this, but I don't have to respect you, lady.
You should have hit her with the, you know, I help pay your salary, right?
Oh my God, I know, right? You know, I fucking fucking do too. My fucking, or at least I will. My student loan money, the government subsidized. My money to pay for your salary. Great, thanks, bitch. fucking hair. Whatever. I'm not gonna get too much into it. I'm not gonna say anything on recording. I'm gonna regret. But yeah, right. Yeah. So she finally, like, I start walking away, and I'm finally like, whatever, maybe I'll, and I say this to her, I go, whatever, maybe I'll just drop out. And she goes, good, I hope you do. Let me know when you do. And I was just like, what? And I turned around and said, fuck you.
Yeah.
And that's not going to work out well for me. No. But we're going to see how this goes. We'll report also, back for next week on if her you want to hear about what's going on.
Yeah, on her end.
She can't.
What kind of role model says something like that?
Nothing.
You're supposed to be the type of supportive person that's, like, building these people up.
No respect for her. I have no respect for this lady.
No, I can understand
and
that.
And I didn't have any respect for her boots before this. I already had no respect for her before this. And I'm going to... Unfortunately, we don't have a video part of this podcast. But I'm going to go ahead and show Jay her notes from the other day, and I'm just going to ask him, Jay, how am I supposed to do anything with this?
All right, let's see this. What the fuck is that?
That's her whiteboard notes. That's on the whiteboard during class.
Okay. For anyone who's questioning what I'm reading, I'm going to walk you through as if you're a blind person. Imagine, close your eyes. And just imagine you're sitting in the front row of an auditorium. Up there is a whiteboard. Next to it is one of those pull-down movie screens. On the whiteboard is poorly done Egyptian hieroglyphics and Chinese characters. Stop. Stop. We're in a visualization period here at the podcast. You see these characters. They make no fucking sense. You pull out a translator. Google says these are not Chinese or Egyptian characters. These are English letters. You go, what the fuck are you talking about? No, they're not. Look, I'm a pretty good reader here, Doug. I don't know what the fuck this says. She wrote what looks like vertically at one point, like it's sideways. She turned it 90 degrees for some fucking reason. Bro, bitch was tilted. I don't know what the fuck happened.
Bro, she was sideways. Dude, she was just sideways at one point.
Yeah. She's literally the notes all... they start... Okay, back to calmness. Stay in the visualization. It starts vertical. As we go down the individual lines of writing, the lines continue to get more and more right. Imagine if the person writing was standing on like the center of a circle, and as you move towards the bottom of the board, you're now at almost 90 degrees, you know, perpendicular to the floor. The word I'm looking for here is illegible. It's illegible. You cannot read this. It's
completely illegible.
There's arrows pointing to nothing. There's nothing written there. It's just an arrow.
Bro,
I think this one says transcripts, but she forgot.
What am I doing?
But she forgot the letter R. She again wrote edit script, but there's no R, so it says sipped. Does she mean scepter? Are we back to Egyptian characters? I don't know. Yeah, this isn't good, Andrew. It's not good. It's really not good.
No, dude. No, it's really not. It's really not good. It's really a bad situation. You're
wrong. I think you'd have a better chance of passing this class if you had a fucking sign language interpreter and you didn't know sign language. I think at least then you'd see a couple hand motions and you go, does she mean writing? You'd have a chance, a fighting chance of trying to understand this. Yeah. Oh, God.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. So that's what I'm dealing with here.
Yeah, it's not fun.
It's not good. It's not good.
No.
It's a bad time. Stay tuned, folks. And you will get the play-by-play analysis week by week.
If you ever needed a reason to tune into episode 6.
The battle between me and my teacher.
Yeah, this will be fun, dude. I'm excited.
Yeah, this will be good.
All right, anything else?
I think I'm good. You want to go on that one?
Yeah. That was great. So I've had quite a few this week. Let me talk about two.
Okay.
The first, this is a coming to the light moment for myself. I'm kind of notorious, especially amongst family members, for my inability to spend money like an adult. I tend to be a little wasteful.
Me too.
I often forget things, and so I'm almost always paying late fees, absent fees, missed appointment fees.
Yeah.
Every fee that they can charge me with.
You've been charged.
And we've already talked about this because of my late rent payment and how that led to the termination of my tenancy. Now, luckily, it doesn't go on my record, but still, not great, right? And during that process, always mentally to me, I felt like, hey, you're getting the most money out of me. Like, I'm doing you a favor. This one, there's nobody winning except a random tire fill air company with a compressor on the side of a 7-Eleven. Because if I'm being honest, I've had a hole in my tire, a slow leak, for about, I think we're at 9 or 10 months now.
You're still driving on that same tire? I fixed that tire in the dead of winter.
Last winter, not this past winter. It was the winter before, I believe.
No, there's no way. It was recently.
I know we're closing in on 10 months. Just because of when I first fixed that tire.
That's crazy, dude.
So to answer your question, thank you for reminding me. Yes, I am driving on the same tire.
That's wild, dude.
It runs out of air about every 2 days.
Yeah.
And I refill it about every 2 days.
You know...
10 months.
You know tires aren't that much money.
You know that fixing a leak in a tire is free, right? And I spent somewhere around $300 putting air into that tire.
Why do you do that?
Clean but still a mess. Hey, we don't judge here, right?
Clean but
let
still
me be without judge here.
So what happened?
Nothing. I still am fixing it. There's no progress.
There's no progress.
But as I was driving over here, I realized it was low again, and I was going to have to ask you for your compressor.
Yeah. Yeah, you could lose that.
So I was like, I should probably talk about that. Other thing was the repair crew that was scheduled to come by my apartment at 4 to 6 today. Hey boys, my bad. I forgot it was Friday. I was deep in a slumber.
A slumber.
As the big bear I am, I was a fucking hibernating dog. I was just like in a totally other dimension. I woke up to a text saying, hey, we tried to get into the apartment. We were knocking and knocking. Nobody answered. And I was just like, ah, fuck. This isn't going to look great on my attempt to convince them I really want to help them fix the place. So they're not going to be stoked about that. Totally cool. I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do about it. We're going to fix it. We're going to get that taken care of.
At some point. Somehow.
I hope.
No, it'll be fine. You can't say you hope. It'll be fine. You'll do it.
Shout out to Andrew for his optimism.
Okay. There you go. Shout out.
All right, so that's my fucking...
That's a good... that's a pretty good clean but still a mess. That was a pretty good one, in my opinion. So let's get into songs of the week. And I think that I had two this week. And I know you had one as well. So we got a couple of these. There's some suggestions to throw out for songs for y'all to listen to. I have my two separated by things that I don't think really separate them, because I'm pretty sure now that I think more about the first song, it's also about addiction.
Mm-hmm.
But I was going to put it as in recovery, and I don't believe that. So we're going to go with the first song. It's called Lungs by Townes Van Zandt. Great song. Townes was a really a songwriting genius. He was a great songwriter. A lot of his songs are made famous by other musicians.
Mm-hmm.
Waiting Around to Die might be one you've heard of.
Is he dead?
He is dead, yes. He died in the early 2000s of a drug overdose.
R.I.P. Townes.
Yes, he was he died when he was like 50-something. Pretty young. And so but he was, he died of an overdose, I believe. Townes was, me and my buddy Sawyer, shout out Sawyer, if you're listening, you need to be listening to this. Sawyer and I have a bet that, at least I believe I remember betting this, that, if we, first one to have a child beyond, already the existing ones,
the exception,
first one to have a child gets to name their kid Townes, because we both liked the name Townes. In one way or another, even a middle name is fine.
What would the nickname be?
I don't know.
Townie?
Town.
Town
Townes is not. Townes is one syllable. You don't need a nickname.
Town Syndrome?
Town Syndrome? Oh my god. That might be what the kids in school call him. Fuck. You might need to rethink this.
Alright, so continue on with the song.
Yes, Townes Van Zandt, great musician. I think if he had been in a band and he had been writing lyrics for a band, like that may have been better for him. But I think he probably had some issues with getting along with other musicians. I would imagine that would probably be the case given the addiction issues.
Yeah.
The other one I've got is a song called Midnight Train by a band called Rattlesnake Milk. Now this is a sick song. Rattlesnake Milk has a cool sound to them. They're active today, and they're actually playing a song at Red Rocks nearby, or a show at Red Rocks nearby, opening for Charlie Crockett. So that might be an interesting one to go see. I know Dawson, shout out Dawson's already going to go see that. So we may need to go to that, Jay.
Sounds interesting. I'm still not convinced that these aren't fucking totally made up bands.
I'll play the song.
Rattlesnake Milk and Johnny Crockett. Charlie Crockett.
Yes.
Raise your hand if you think that sounds like a real name. Oh, nobody's raising their hand. Oh, too late. I missed your turn, Andrew. Yeah. It's bullshit. But okay.
Rattlesnake
Milk. I'm going to check it out.
Cool band.
Country folk.
Country.
Cool.
Kind of bluegrassy folk. Yeah.
Heard.
Real country from Charlie Crockett, but from Rattlesnake Milk, it's like kind of a rock and roll country almost, and it's pretty cool. It's got like all of their songs appear to be ballads about like a song about a story, like a mm-hmm. and this particular one is the ballad of a guy driving to find methamphetamine. One of my favorite line in the song is one of the opening lines, and I won some money in a dice game. With the money, bought some beer. I picked a lizard up in East Louisiana. Hadn't seen her in a couple of years. I like calling a woman a lizard.
Oh,
I
think it's funny. A lot lizard.
Lot lizard, yeah.
Yeah.
And not a woman specifically, a lot lizard. Like, not like a, this isn't a respectable woman, this is a lot lizard.
No, I got it. Yeah. Trust me.
Picked a lizard up, dude. It's so funny. To call someone a lizard. But, yeah. It's a funny tune, and it's a good tune. It's a real jam. And, so yeah, those are my two. Lungs by Townes Van Zandt and Midnight Train by Rattlesnake Milk.
Both sound sick.
Yeah.
In a very different genre. And it's hard to say because I haven't listened to both those. I think that'll be something we do from here on forward is I'll listen to the ones you have.
Sure.
And just kind of see what my takeaway was and vice versa. But mine is a heavy rock kind of metal song, depending on how you choose to classify the genres. But it's by The Plot and You. It's just called Forgotten. It's a song about addiction and losing friends to addiction. Mm. It's a very intense song.
Like camping?
Say it again.
Like camping.
Fucking intense. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to wrap that fucking mic wire around your neck. I swear to God. Jesus Christ. Listen, to the listeners at home, we're going to put a fucking warning on this podcast. May damage brain cells. No, what? This is like the perfect example. Everybody has a podcast. Like, why are we here right now? Why are we talking? We have no business being here. You just ruined all credibility.
This is true. We didn't have any credibility to begin with.
No, that's fair. But yeah, it's a super intense song. I personally, I like to have a balance of songs that are very uplifting and very calming in my life. And then at the same time, songs that are very intense and kind of feeling through the emotion. This song falls into that latter camp. It's incredibly specific about, you know, losing the people in your life and society essentially forgetting about those who have died due to, you know, like overdose and being overlooked and being seen as like waste and whatnot.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really, really deep song. And the thing I like about this type of music, even if you're someone who's not typically like a hard rock or metal listener, I'd check it out. And the reason I think so, and bluegrass is actually, ironically, probably one of the genres I'd put up in top three for this. But metal and, like I said, probably bluegrass and like old soul music are the ones where you can hear the most pain in somebody's voice.
Right, yeah.
Like you can hear the voice breaks and how like just wicked down into the core of a human being these like feelings and emotions go. This right. song is one of those. I mean, you hear the screams during like the chorus and you're like, oh no, this song isn't metaphorical. Like this dude right, is really yeah. going through this.
Yeah.
And there's another band as well. Thousand Below. I don't have any other songs. There's a bunch. The Love You Let Too Close is a really good album. But like the singer lost his best friend to suicide.
That's a lot.
You know, they had their own addiction issues. And so their music, again, if, for some people it brings them down a lot. I'm not going to deny that.
Sure,
For me, I find that rawness to be like largely comforting.
Sure.
You know, hearing someone else talk about that is very rewarding. In some ways, like, of externalizing it. Wipe the grin off your face. I don't mean it like that, you asshole.
No. I was just laughing at it. Never mind.
All right.
Never mind.
I got a booger or something, dog.
No, that's not what it
is. Okay, so, but yeah, that's my song, Forgotten by the Plotting You. Check it out. Really intense, but nothing for the music.
Talking about heavy shit, I'm just laughing.
Yeah, psychopath.
Yeah, whatever.
Okay, now moving from talking about heavy shit and laughing about it, that brings us into our next segment. Dun, dun, dun. Trauma Bingo.
Oh.
So this is one that Andrew and I have bounced back and forth for a little while. Andrew has put together some pretty awesome different points categories here.
So we have not labeled out the points for them yet. It's right, going to be related, labeled from least gnarly 1 point to most gnarly 5 points. We have not labeled them out yet. That might be its own episode. Right.
These are not ordered.
These are not ordered. So we have shot and stabbed as the first one. And it can go either or. You don't have to be both.
Imagine how slow you'd have to be to get stabbed.
And honestly, we probably should have... Shut up. We probably should have fucking... those be separate categories. Because that way, if you've been both, you're the king, dude.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know? STD. Treatable. STD.
Non-treatable.
These are different things. Molested as a child. Molested as an adult. Also different things. Also, we have to recognize... And it's going to be less points for molested as an adult. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you got to get knocked off a little bit there.
Molested as a kid? Really bad. Really? Molested as an adult? Less bad.
Still really bad.
But... Still really bad, but less bad. Bad car accident. Another one. Well, we need a couple. Shit happens. We need a couple of ones. Bad car accident, maybe like a two, because
we'll have to figure something out. I think maybe we could put like a sliding scale for some of these.
Sure, yeah.
So if you get in a bad car accident and someone dies in the hospital for a week, yeah, it's one thing. If you get into a bad car accident, someone goes flying out the window.
Oh, yeah, it's a whole
you snap a couple that's a femurs.
That's a whole other different.
Yeah, not great.
We'll have to put a scale for that one. Head trauma, another one. Dead family members. With a caveat, they must be immediate family members.
Mm-hmm.
No cousins. No cousins here. You have to have lost sibling or a parent.
Yeah, no fucking aunts and uncles.
I will give. Give it if someone comes on the show and they're like, "Well, I grew up with them." If you grew up with the grandparent, the aunt and uncle, I'll give it. If they were a parent to you, that counts.
You better have photo evidence. If you come on here and dare try to lie to me and say, "Oh, well, Grandpappy Joe was so close to me," and you don't have a single photo of him standing in one of your fucking baseball games, out.
Yeah.
No points.
That's fair. No points for you.
Next one.
Not even for the dead sibling, the family member. Friend, family member overdose. Oh, did I? Yeah. Sibling, family member killed themselves. More points for that. Friend, family overdose. Personal overdose. I like this next one too. Attacked by an animal.
Do X's count?
X's for the animal?
Yeah.
Technically, no. We should put attacked by a human, I think, under here.
Okay, that's fair.
Somewhere fair. Under here, I think that is. House fire. Not good. That was my biggest fear as a child.
Mine was wolves. I thought wolves were going to jump through my window in Florida and kill me.
That is an irrational fear. I grew up in California, at least. It was normal for us to have major fires every year.
Here he goes, comparing traumas and fears.
Yeah.
All right, next one.
parents divorced before the age of 18.
Nobody gives a fuck that your parents broke up when you were 32.
Straight up. Severe illness. Bullied as a child.
It better be real bullying.
Yeah.
I got called fat a few times. It doesn't count.
That's not the same thing.
No.
Loved one with addiction. Witnessing violence. Living through a natural disaster.
Again, got to be a good one.
Yeah.
Got to be a reasonable threat here.
Sure. Because
in Florida, I lived through a lot of hurricanes. We'd go to the beach.
A category 5 would count, or a 4 even, like a gnarly 4 would count.
Yeah, like if they're or like some of the ones that were just like 2s and 3s, but like severely flooded your area.
Sure, yeah.
If there was reasonable threat for your life, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Witnessing violence, did I miss that one?
Yes. No, you got that one, I think.
Okay. Evicted. Homeless. Identity theft. Financial ruin. All different things. All mm-hmm. different point values.
Identity theft, too.
Is not a joke, Jim.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I hope we get sued for that.
Copyright infringement.
Yeah.
They can get 3 cents of the proceeds. Identity theft, it better not like you got $50 stolen out of your Wells Fargo account.
No, my mom you need to have had like full identity theft.
Yeah.
Which is not a good thing.
I can't imagine, no.
No, that happened to a couple family members of mine, actually. Okay, unexpected pregnancy. Miscarriage. On either side, I'll give that to either. That is traumatic for both parts of the couple there. I'll give that to either side. Public scandal or other intense social shaming. Part of a mass terror event.
Is going to a Lizzo concert count?
Holy shit.
My bad.
That's crazy.
Timing is awful now.
The timing may have been better on the living through a natural disaster.
Yeah. And measured on the Richter scale, it counts. All right, go ahead.
Let's see.
Shout out Kickstart.
Let's see. Lived through a war. So if you're like, this goes into the other ones later. Saw action as a soldier, refugee, or displaced. Yeah, those would also, if you were a refugee or displaced, you would get lived through a war also. I think so. And if you were a soldier in that said war, you could get all three of those. We've got involuntary hospitalization. We've got psychotic episode.
Involuntary hospitalization.
Yes.
Does that count any, like, illnesses, breaks?
I think, yes. I think I may have actually put that later as a life-threatening illness or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, yeah, something like that would, I think, yes, I think that would count as involuntary hospitalization. Cool. But I meant it as, like, mental care.
Okay, so we'll differentiate
that. Yeah, we'll differentiate that. Foster care as a child. Misdiagnosed and over-medicated by a doctor. So we have separate categories for those. Misdiagnosed for your illness and over-medicated, because they are separate things.
Mm-hmm.
Struggling to get help or being dismissed or ignored when asking for help. That's no good. Incarcerated of any sort of, so whether that be POW or whether that be just regular prison or jail here in the States or abroad, that'd be bad too. And honestly, you may get more points for being imprisoned abroad. That sounds awful, dude. I knew a kid. I went to rehab with a kid that. Well, this isn't the worst place.
He got in prison in Finland. I mean, I think it's pretty.
He
sick.
Was in Germany, the only thing that was shitty about it was I think that he couldn't talk
accent?
To anybody.
Oh,
well, because everyone's in German.
I thought it would be that horrible accent.
The horrible accent.
The fucking worst accent in the world after Dutch.
Das. So yes, incarcerated. Cult involvement or religious trauma.
Does growing up near Scientology count?
Near or in?
Near.
No.
Damn it.
No, doesn't count.
I grew up next to the headquarters down in Florida. It's awesome.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly on our list here, and again, if we're missing any, let us know. Revenge porn is the last one. That's a pretty shitty thing to have happen to someone.
Yeah, that'd be terrible.
So, if we are missing any, let us know. We have our availability on Instagram, as well as you can reach us through email. Drop us an email. Follow that Instagram. We need some more followers on that Instagram, everybody. And leave us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. We are going to get out of here. We are going to eventually do the categories or the point system for those categories.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to get out of here for now. Jay, do you have any final...
Yeah, you forgot to mention the name. That is going to be Malfunction Junction Podcast
mm-hmm.
on Instagram and malfunctionjunctionpodcast@gmail.com.
Correct.
Correct.
Reminder, we have a few different things you can send in. If you'd like to send us your questions for next week, always greatly appreciated. If you have things that you'd like to tell for your own personal stories, 5 to 10 minutes, we can do that. And if you have any suggestions for trauma, bingo, or other things you'd like to see on the podcast, please let us know. We're super receptive to it, and we're really early on, so we're very malleable. We want to see what people are interested in listening to, and yeah, we'll adapt to that. Other than that, stay sober, try to stay sane, although that seems a little less likely these days. Mm-hmm. And yeah, be healthy. If you need help, reach out. And that's one thing, one caveat I think we should add to our ending here, is if you are going through something serious and you need someone to speak to, please reach out to us. If one of us can't make ourselves available, we are touched in with a pretty large community of people who are very willing to speak with people about those problems. So, if you're not comfortable reaching out to a hotline, if you haven't worked up the courage to step into a center yet or go talk to a professional, at least talk to us and let us help you out a little bit in the best way we can, and try and offer you at least some support in your life.
Yep.
That's all I got.
And that's all I got too.
Cool.
Great.
Have a good week.
We will see everybody next week. Have a great night, everybody.